Welcome to episode 249 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on September 24th, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, we discuss the recent announcement of Surface devices. Spoiler, Ben isn't a huge fan. We talk about the depreciation of legacy authentication in Exchange Online, and we wrap up with AKS scale down and the AKS run command.
Stuff has been put in motion. What stuff? I don't know.
What kind of motion? Are you going to get a Surface Studio laptop, whatever thingamajigger?
Oh, that does some motion. It folds and no. So short answer, no.
No?
I don't.
You weren't pining for a follow-up to a Surface Book to get you going?
Is that really, that can't be the follow-up to Surface Book.
No, that's 100% the follow-up to Surface Book.
So is Surface Book going away and this is the new Surface Book with a non-detachable screen? Surface Book still had a detachable
screen. As far as I know. But yeah, so the Surface Books had a detachable screen, but that screen also came with a bunch of, I think, just like ergonomic issues on its own. So that hinge was mechanically complex. The number of times that I was in a Microsoft store when those were still a thing, and you would see people bringing in a Surface Book because it was broken, because they couldn't do the detach thing, it wouldn't power on, something like that. Like, it was just not a... like, it was a very solid hunk of hardware, but it was not a solid implementation of said chunk of hardware. It also had some issues. Like, I don't know how much you ever played around with one of those, but the tablet part of it, I think, was a little bit more of a gimmick than everybody really wanted it to be. Because when you ran in tablet mode, you were actually running the entire PC. Like, you still had the entire logic board, hard drive, RAM, battery, all those kinds of things in there. So it led to a very misweighted laptop as well. So it was a very top-heavy laptop, which meant that hinge had to be even more heavy-duty, and it couldn't quite be as smooth as maybe it was supposed to. So yeah, they did not announce new Surface Books. They only announced the Surface Laptop Studio. And supposedly it is the next flagship device, at least in that line.
So I looked at this from a purely aesthetic standpoint. I have not looked at all the specs yet, but I couldn't figure it out. So it has, so if you use it like an iPad with the new Magic Keyboard, when it's opened, it has that type of look where it like folds up and then the screen flips forward and it's like the hinge is connected in the middle of the screen.
So here's the thing. If you're looking at those pictures, which I think you're looking at the ones where it's hinged, but you can, it still looks like you could fit a finger or two underneath the screen.
Well, no, you can't. Like, it sits on the laptop, so you can only access like the bottom row of keys.
No, you're not even supposed to be able to access the bottom row of keys. It, like, take that picture and bring it forward a little bit. It should actually look tented like an A-frame. And the only thing that you can access is the trackpad when you're in that mode. It's kind of got traditional laptop mode where, you know, you're on the hinge screen, yep, key deck in front of you, keyboard and trackpad. And then you've got the tented mode, which covers the entire keyboard, but leaves the trackpad visible. And then you've got the drawing mode, which is where it is flat-ish. Let me put a picture in the chat there for you, which has those kind of three modes in it.
But I have a question. If you're in tented mode, because you're going to be using the pen and drawing on the screen, why do you need the trackpad?
So you're not meant to be drawing on the screen in that mode. So the Surface mode, the drawing mode, is the one where it's fully flat.
Uh-huh. So what are you supposed to be doing in the tented mode? Watching stuff? Watching Netflix?
Consuming media.
That's not what the pictures are that they show. They show you drawing on the screen in the tent mode.
Yeah, well, I recommend going and maybe watching some of the reviews of it because nobody used it that way.
And then it looks like, so I was looking at it from the side, it looks like it has like two tiers to it.
It does.
The top tier, and then it has a smaller bottom tier?
Yeah. So in that deck, it's not a bevel, it's more like an indent. So on the bottom, it's still thin, but it's a lot thinner on the bottom. So the deck with the keyboard and the trackpad almost sticks out over it, like it has a ledge. And that's right. So on the bottom is all the fans and everything. So those slots that you're seeing on the sides, those are all the fans kicking out the air. And then because there's that little bit of that bevel there, that's also where the magnet for a Surface Pen is on that device. So it kind of like sits up and underneath.
Oh, so it sits underneath the front lip there.
Yeah. So it sits kind of like right underneath the front lip by where the trackpad is where the magnets are for the pen. So overall, it's a it's a strange device. It's not the first time it's been done. Like other manufacturers have done this, but like, who knows? You know, it's Microsoft. We'll see how it goes.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. Oh man, it's an interesting looking device. I would want to go into a Microsoft store and play with one before I ever got one.
It's almost like the anti-laptop, given where the fans are. So those fans are kind of concerning that they sit directly on the bottom of the device and shoot right out to the sides. Like laptops already get hot when you use them on your lap. And this isn't like an ARM device or anything like that. It's straight Intel. So it's going to get hot. The fans are going to spin. Like, I don't know how comfortable of a device that would be. Like, if you were going to keep it on your lap as a laptop, or if you're running it in that, I don't know if there's like an official mode for it, but the studio mode where it's all laid flat and kind of set down for, you know, I'm going to be in like digital inking mode.
Right. Well, I feel like the position of those fans too. I feel like I'm being super critical of this device, and I probably am. I feel like the position of those fans too, it does not lead to greater airflow because it's like the fans are buried under the edges of the device.
I don't know. I didn't get a sense for it from some of the reviews. Like if it is even doing, like, I don't know if air is going out both sides, if it's trying to intake on one side, send it out on another. Like you'll have to wait maybe until they're actually in market and for sale. And then go from there, like when there's an iFixit teardown or something.
Yeah. So these are, and we haven't talked, we've just been talking about aesthetics. So tech specs, it's interesting. It's a 14, I was just looking through tech specs now too. So you get like a 14.5-inch screen, 2400 by 1600 resolution, 201 pixels per inch. So the screen sounds like it's a decent screen.
It should be a decent screen. It is an Intel-only device. There's no AMD CPU option that I'm aware of. So that's kind of a little bit of a downer, I think, especially like in the heating cooling department. It's also unclear, like you call it a flagship device, but where it's going to kind of fall out with the GPU it's been released with and everything. It's a strange one.
So this is always up for debate too. Like on a Mac, I actually wish I could get an NVIDIA GPU, but Mac and...
Well, you can if you buy a Mac Pro.
Yeah, but then, well, not natively. You have to go buy all your own GPUs then. You cannot order it with NVIDIA because, well, and will it even work with NVIDIA?
Yes.
I think Mac pulled all the NVIDIA drivers out because they're in a fight with NVIDIA right now.
Only on the Mac Pro will it work, but no eGPU options or things like that. Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, well, and if we want to talk about that, if you're going to end up going to an M1 eventually, there's no eGPU options there either. So you might as well just throw away all those eGPUs that you got a year or two ago when they were really big and Apple didn't have M1s. So other topic. Anyways, processors, yeah, quad core 11th gen Intel processors. So it looks like you can get i5s or i7s, accelerometer, gyroscope, all the light sensors, power supplies. What ports does it have on it? Two USB 4.0 with Thunderbolt 4.
And then the Surface port. Yep.
It has a headphone jack and a Surface Connect port. So it only has two... Okay, people can't make fun of the Mac anymore for only having four Thunderbolt ports given this.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, my Mac Pro, or not my Mac Pro, I wish I had a Mac Pro. My MacBook Pro has more ports than this does on it.
Yeah.
Studio mics, Dolby Vision sound. I mean...
It's a strange little device.
It is. To me, it's a strange replacement for the Surface Book. More so from a... I mean, I get the whole hinge thing, but I don't feel like... I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, the tech specs aren't horrible. I don't know what the pricing like it's going to be. Have they... I was on the website and I see search for resellers. Do they have pricing on this one yet? Surface Pro, new Surface Studio. So you can't buy it from Microsoft. They have Where to Buy. I don't see where you can buy it from... Can you buy it from the Microsoft store under Where to Buy? Don't know.
Yeah, online order. Yep.
Anyways... Interesting. And then they did release some other devices too. So we've been talking about the Surface Studio, but they also had a new Surface Pro. They had a new Surface laptop. I feel like there was one other device.
The Duo, the phone.
Oh, that's right. We're not going to talk about that. Surface Pro 8, Surface Go 3, Surface Laptop Studio. Yeah. And then the Duo were the four devices they announced this week.
Yeah. The Surface Pro 8 looks nice. Like if you're into the Surface line, it's lining up more with what the Surface Pro X was, the ARM equivalent, right? Thinner, smaller bezel, all that good kind of stuff. Yep. It does the hidden pen thing where the pen wraps up into the felt on the keyboard. So it's that more flat pen style. And the keyboard deck is supposed to be a lot stiffer too, which has been kind of one of the ongoing complaints about Surface devices.
So truth be told, I think if I was going to go a Surface route, I'd probably go with the Pro over the Studio laptop. It's got a slightly smaller screen, but better resolution, better pixels per inch. You can still do 32 gigs of RAM. You can still do a quad-core 11th gen processor. Storage, you can still technically go up to 1 terabyte of storage. You don't have the NVIDIA graphics, so you're only having Intel graphics. Same ports. It's essentially the same specs as the Surface laptop, with the exception of the GPU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm more a fan of the Surface Pro. That would be my... If I was going to depart from Mac and go with the Surface line... would probably be the Surface Pro 8.
Duly noted.
My two cents. So if anybody wants to get me a Christmas present, holidays are coming up here, and you want to try to entice me to switch over to the Windows side, the Surface Pro 8 would maybe be it. Maybe.
Is that the one to do?
Yeah, probably. Anywho, one other news. I'm done with the Surface. If I go anymore, I might get more negative. I need a happy day, Scott.
Oh boy.
It's been a busy week. I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I don't know that I can help you too much there.
You don't have any happy news?
I mean, there's always happy news.
What about Exchange?
There's new things that come. Sure, Exchange is not happy news.
Well, it depends on who you are. For me, this is kind of happy news. So remember we talked a while ago about the whole switch from basic authentication and Modern Auth and Exchange Online? This was like back in February of this year, 6 months or so ago, Microsoft said it's going to use telemetry that it's gathering to start disabling legacy authentication for people that no longer use it.
Yeah, this is coming up pretty fast. Well, depending on how, you know, agile your organization...
Depending on how you look at it.
How agile your organization is. Like, if you haven't been paying attention to this, like, it was announced quite a while ago, I believe, like at least back as far as like early 2021. But yes, October 2022 is the date now when basic authentication stops for all Exchange Online tenants.
Yeah. So as of that date, essentially September, what, a year and like 8 days from now, a year and 7 days from now, Modern or basic auth is just going to start getting shut down, whether you use it or not. So we talked about, what was the other product? Azure AD Connect. You have a year to get up to the 2.x version of that. Along with that, you also have a year now to make sure that you are no longer using legacy authentication for Exchange Online anywhere.
So I think the key thing here is, in the past with some of these announcements, you know, it's going away and we encourage you to get off it, but it ultimately sticks around and that's a choice that you can make. That is not the case with this one. It is going to be permanently disabled October 1, 2022. And if your tenant is still using it, then it doesn't matter. It's all just going to start breaking on you. So get off it.
Right. So Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. So, and I get for some people, this is sad news. For me, this is happy news because I'm tired of having both types of authentication in there. And you run into certain things that like conditional access is, it doesn't really work with legacy auth. You need to be on modern auth for some of the conditional access stuff. You run into different environments where it's like, well, are you using this? Are you using that? And it's like you run into this whole thing of there can be two auth methods and different things work and don't work and all of that to get over to modern auth 100%. Personally, I think is a good thing. There's a lot more security benefits there. There's a lot more advantages there. And there's a lot of reasons to be on modern auth and get off legacy auth.
You know, I think this is just kind of like part of the general cleanup in your environment. When you're doing all those things like updating all your legacy licensing PowerShell scripts you wrote to use the graph now, it's just a, you know, another time to sit down and potentially get this work done. Like it has been announced, everybody's had lots of time, and now it's going to be coming offline. I think there's another important thing to consider in there too, is that for some tenants, this is actually going to start being shut off sooner than that. So if based on telemetry, you're not using these features, it's going to go ahead and be disabled for you earlier than that October 1, 2022 deadline, but it will still be enabled for SMTP auth. And once October 1 hits, that's it. You're done. You're done across the board.
My guess is that's the one that's going to hit the most people, is that SMTP auth for doing like relay things. So I think like printers or not printers, scanners that are connecting to SMTP via legacy auth and different devices that still use legacy authentication, third-party services that still do relays using legacy authentication. I wonder if this is going to affect a lot more of ISVs and hardware manufacturers.
I think it's going to be more hardware manufacturers, like you said, like old fax machines, printers, like any of those multifunction devices.
Having to figure that out. But then at the end, it's going to hit businesses because they're either going to have to, like, are these old legacy devices going to get updated firmware or something to work? Or is it going to have to be, well, it's time to go get rid of that old Xerox machine you've had for 20 years and buy brand new hardware?
Call up your printer vendors while you're thinking about the rest of this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But again, ultimately, I think that's a good thing. It made me kind of happy to see that that was going to finally go away. I'm ready to put a nail in the coffin of legacy authentication. Although I'm sure there's a lot of businesses that aren't.
It is what it is. Prepare thyselves. It's coming.
Yeah. That's all I got. Do you have news? You had news that we didn't talk about last week that you said we could talk about. What do you want to talk about, Scott?
You know,
what makes you happy on this Friday afternoon?
Azure stuff is always a happy thing. You've played a little bit with AKS, yeah?
Tiny bit. I would say of all, maybe not of all, of a lot of the services, AKS is the one I have played probably the least with, or yeah. I'm not as AKS savvy as some people.
Gotcha. Are you familiar with VM scale sets then?
Yes.
So AKS kind of runs on top of VM scale sets. So you can think of some of the scaling operations maybe in the same way as far as scale out and scale in things. So what usually happens when you scale out an AKS cluster, you're going to go ahead and add a bunch of new nodes into one or more node pools. And each one of those nodes is a virtual machine, right? It's a unit of compute that is spinning up. On scale down, what typically happens is your extra nodes are deleted. So the VMs go away, the disks go away, and the next time you need to scale out again, that scale out operation is going to take a little bit longer because new virtual machines need to be created and you need to land and allocate all that compute and kind of have it ready to go. There's a new preview out for AKS that with scale down mode, you can now choose whether you are going to delete or deallocate those nodes on scale down, which is pretty cool. So effectively, you're taking that VM rather than deleting it all the way. You can take them to a stopped state, like that stopped paren, open paren, deallocated, close paren state, which means you're not being charged for your CPU, your RAM, but you do get to retain your disks and things like that. That also means like that you're going to be able to start up faster in scale out operations, like when you go to scale that cluster again. And it has the additive benefit of you're retaining your disks. So if you think about the way AKS works with containers and having to do pulls from image repositories and having local copies of those images available on disk, that means all your container images are retained between scale in and scale out operations as well. So you'll actually have faster container startup. So like post-boot operations outside of even just, hey, I need to allocate a bunch of compute for this scaling operation, that is all eased as well, which is pretty nifty.
Got it. That is nice, especially for those customers that maybe scaling a lot or scaling frequently and want that to be a faster process.
Yep. Avoid just kind of all the ingress and other things, which really, like, they are time consumers. So if you are into rapid scaling operations, like if you find that based on the kind of architecture of your application, you need to be able to scale fast and can't accommodate maybe something like a 20-minute scaling event while a bunch of VMs start up, a bunch of post-boot automation executes, and your nodes come online, they come into the cluster, and then your pods start, and then cluster starts distributing resources, like all those things, then this is a super cool feature. So if you want to get started with it, it's all available in the CLI today. Like to go ahead and execute these, you do have to add the AKS preview extension to go ahead and get that up and running. And then there's a specific feature that you'll go ahead and register within the container service, which is AKS scale down mode preview. And after that, you can just go ahead and take your node pools and you'll have a new parameter on there for scale down mode. And you can say, hey, I want to deallocate or whatever you want it to look like when that node pool comes online. You can always come back and delete the nodes later and do things like that as well.
Okay. So I was going to ask, this is still a preview feature then. I'm assuming if you need the preview CLI, or is it general availability, but it's just a preview in the CLI?
No. So the feature itself, so this feature for being able to deallocate nodes on a scaling operation, that's a preview feature as well.
Okay, yep. Got it.
So it does have all the...
Yes, I see it in the article here.
It has all the caveats that come along with that for support and everything else. Don't use this in production.
Workloads. Right. Test it out. It's unsupported preview.
But
all of those things.
Super easy to onboard. There's no like gated feature registration or anything. Like you don't have to fill out a form. You know, you don't have to have a PM in some org add you to an allow list for your subscription or things like that. You just go ahead and register the feature and get started with it.
All right. Looks good.
Yep.
Spot by NetApp is the cloud automation platform that makes it easy to deliver continuously optimized infrastructure at the lowest possible cost. Spot helps their customers get the most out of their cloud investments by automating cloud infrastructure to ensure performance, reduced complexity, and optimized costs. Their machine learning and automation scale to exactly meet application needs using the most efficient mix of instances and pricing models, eliminating the risks of over-provisioning and cloud waste. Best of all, their software works with leading cloud platforms, services, and tools so that you can simplify and automate your cloud infrastructure wherever your workloads and applications run and however you run them. Discover how leading companies from cloud-native startups to global enterprises are automating, simplifying, and optimizing their cloud infrastructure with Spot by NetApp. Check them out at spot.io/MSIT, where you can find more information, request a demo, or even start a free trial.
You want to talk about some more AKS stuff too?
Sure. Let's just keep going in AKS because I did not sleep last night, so I'm shot. Okay.
So this one is generally available. Are you familiar with the VM run command and being able to kind of invoke a PowerShell command or a bash command on your Linux boxes?
I don't know that I've ever tried that.
Run commands are really cool. You can go to any virtual machine in the Azure portal, and from the Azure portal, yep, you can just paste in a script. You know, I want to do a git process info on a VM, and I want to have that output come back to me, but I don't want to RDP into the VM. I don't want to have to do remote PowerShell, anything like that. You can just use the run command and go ahead and do all that through the portal. That's available through the CLI, PowerShell, all those kinds of things. So it's a super cool way to be able to effectively have all the terminal output from a VM come directly back just into the portal or into other automation maybe that you execute off box or things like that.
That's right. So I remember this. I just don't think I've actually tried it yet. I need to go play with some of this. I need more time, Scott.
Yeah.
I need to sleep less. Anyways, keep going.
We could all use more time. So that's been available for virtual machines for a while. It is also landed for, it's been a preview for AKS, and it recently went GA for AKS, the ability to do the same kind of run command things. So from something like the Azure CLI, you have the ability now, you just go in, you say AZ, AKS, command invoke, and then, you know, whatever you want to do. You want to do kubectl, you know, git pods, and boom, you know, you're all set. You can go ahead and run something up. Heck, if you wanted to execute a deployment, like you could get pretty crazy with what you want to do here, because you're effectively able to submit commands to your AKS master and then just have it go execute and do whatever it needs to do. And of course, bring the output of that command back to you as well. So this is really helpful for, you know, obviously just-in-time command kinds of things. And really quick, I just need to run this script. It's super easy. I've got my laptop. I want to be able to get in here. Also super helpful for private clusters. So if your cluster's 100% kind of firewalled off from every place else, now you can potentially run things from a client that is not on the cluster private network, because it's all a command that's injected through the ARM, so the Azure Resource Manager API plane, the management plane, which is super nifty.
Got it. Huh. I need to go play with this run command some more.
Yeah. Probably. It's a super helpful little thing.
It would. So can you execute run commands against a VM from Logic Apps?
So as long as Logic App had the Azure PowerShell modules available with it, or it had the access to the CLI, things like that. Or if you wanted to run it straight through the REST API, you could do that as well. Because if effectively what you're doing with the run command is you're submitting a command to the management plane. So it's actually going to ARM, and then ARM is going in through the VM agent on your virtual machines, and it's saying, hey, VM, go run this thing in the context of a system account, you know, on like a Windows box.
Got it. Because so I'm thinking like right now, a lot of times, if I need to run PowerShell on a VM from one of those, you can do like Azure Automation with a hybrid worker runbook and do all of that to run PowerShell locally on a VM.
Right.
But then I started thinking if you could like use this run command instead of going that route.
Absolutely. So if you have just like quick one-off things that you need to run, either on individual VMs or I would say even like at scale, say you had a one or two line PowerShell script that you wanted to run on 500 virtual machines in your environment. You got a bunch of Windows servers, you want to set a new registry key, right? That something that's totally viable and doable. You could do that with something like Azure Automation, but then you need to onboard all your VMs into Azure Automation, have that capability. That's going to cost you some scratch, like just to kind of figure that out. You could also maybe do something like use like a PowerShell VM extension. But to do that, you've got to write yourself a big for loop anyway. Like go get all these VMs and then enumerate over them, do like a for each, something like that. Why not just run the run command anyway? Because you're already in the for each loop. Like you don't need to run an extension or anything else. Just go kind of like fire and forget, do this one thing. And because you do get the output back from the command to you, like anything that's sent in to like the standard out, I believe it's like the standard out feed on the VM side comes back to you in the, as the output of that command, you can totally have like other automation or other things that like conditional logic that kick off based on that.
Running. So if you would do it in a for loop, would it run everything in parallel or does it go run it on a VM and then does it actually have to wait for the output before it would continue in the for loop?
So that's the beauty of these things, right? You can choose. If it's a for loop, it's serial by default.
You can pick and choose.
But if you're doing a PowerShell loop, you could go ahead and kick everything off as a job every time you call that, like do like a PS job. And then, yeah, you could run 500 of them in parallel. Totally doable.
Oh, in my free time this week. I don't have any free time this weekend.
You don't? Come on.
No. But this is nifty that it is coming to AKS too. I'm going to have to go, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been around for AKS. It's just been kicking around in preview. So now you got to kind of go down the path of, it's GA'd now for AKS and being able to execute those commands like kubectl commands. You know, you want to do like a Helm deployment, things like that. Like that's all doable on the AKS side. The VM stuff's been around for a while now.
I just haven't done it. I mean, it's like, it's hard to keep up with all the stuff that comes out within the Microsoft cloud because they don't release stuff that often.
we never release anything. You're right.
No, it just slowly trickles out. Yeah, I've just missed the whole run command thing altogether. Something else on my list. But with that, we should probably call it a day because I have work to do. I have a weekend trip to pack for and I have more work to do. I don't even remember what I've got a bunch of stuff going on. Construction in the house. We're getting close.
It's your show, so.
That's not my show. I'm just making stuff up as I go lately. Yes, in construction in the house, laying floors. Floors are going down, so all good things. But I will let you go. Enjoy your weekend. I'm going to go get some work done, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Well, thanks, Ben. As always, I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.